Good morning, and welcome to the first Saturday edition of America's Leaders from Coast to Coast, the 250th anniversary edition. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
On weekdays, we profile the current members of Congress. But on weekends, we travel back in time to profile the presidents and vice presidents who built this country. And of course, there is only one place to start, the father of his country, George Washington.
He is the indispensable man. Without George Washington, there is simply no United States of America. He commanded the Continental Army to victory against the British Empire, and then he presided over the writing of the Constitution. But before he was the marble statue we know today, he was a very real and very ambitious young man.
That's a part of the story people often miss. He wasn't born a general. He actually started as a surveyor in the Virginia wilderness. That job taught him the landscape of the frontier. But his early military career was actually a series of disasters. In his 20s, during the French and Indian War, he was involved in skirmishes that arguably started a global war. He had two horses shot out from under him and four bullet holes in his coat during the Battle of the Monongahela. He developed a reputation as a man who simply could not be killed. That bulletproof legend is part of what made the Continental Congress trust him in 1775.
And that trust was tested severely. The Revolutionary War wasn't a string of victories. It was mostly a string of desperate retreats. We have to talk about Valley Forge. This wasn't just a cold winter. It was a near collapse of the entire cause. Men were eating shoe leather. Washington was fighting a two-front war, one against the British and one against a Congress that wouldn't send him supplies. His genius wasn't necessarily battlefield tactics. He actually lost more battles than he won. It was his ability to keep a starving, freezing army from dissolving. He held the spirit of 76 inches together by sheer force of will.
Fast forward to 1789. He is unanimously elected the first president. But what kind of nation was he leading? We have the data from the very first census in 1790, and it paints a picture of a primitive, disconnected land.
It was tiny and fragile. The total population was only about 3.9 million people. That is roughly the size of Oklahoma today. And it was 95% rural. There were no highways, no telegraphs. News traveled at the speed of a horse. If you lived in Georgia, someone in Massachusetts might as well have been a foreigner. The largest city, New York, had only 33,000 people. Washington's home state of Virginia was the massive powerhouse, holding about 20% of the entire country's population. It was really a collection of separate countries trying to act as one, and Washington was the only symbol they all agreed on.
He had to turn that loose collection of states into a functional government, and to do it, he created the first cabinet. But this wasn't a team of rivals getting along. It was a cage match.
Oh, it was toxic. On one side, you had Alexander Hamilton, the Secretary of the Treasury, who wanted a strong central bank, cities, and industry. On the other side, you had Thomas Jefferson, the Secretary of State, who wanted a nation of quiet farmers and weak central government. They hated each other. Washington felt like a referee. He generally sided with Hamilton on economics, establishing the first Bank of the United States. But he tried desperately to keep Jefferson in the fold. This feud is actually what birthed the first political parties, the Federalists and the Democratic Republicans, exactly the thing Washington feared most.
We also have to address the great paradox of his life. He was the father of liberty, yet he owned over 300 human beings at Mount Vernon.
It is the stain that cannot be washed away. Washington was a lifelong enslaver. He was a demanding master who pursued escapees relentlessly, even while serving as president. When he lived in Philadelphia, which was the capital at the time, he famously rotated his enslaved staff back to Virginia every 6 months, to avoid a Pennsylvania law that would have automatically freed them. However, unlike many other founders, his private letters show he was deeply conflicted. He knew slavery was wrong and that it would eventually tear the Union apart. In his will, he became the only slave-owning founding father to free his enslaved workforce. It was a final posthumous act of conscience, but it doesn't erase the decades of bondage that built his wealth.
His presidency ended with one final revolutionary act. He went home. In 1796, he published his farewell address and rode away.
That letter is still read aloud in the Senate every year. He warned us against two things: foreign entanglements, getting dragged into European wars, and the spirit of party. He predicted that if Americans started caring more about their political party than their country, It would open the door to, quote, 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 one, quote, men. He died just 2 years later, in 1799. His last words were simply, "'Tis well." He knew he had done his duty. He set the standard that every single president after him has had to chase.
That is our profile for the first president. Join us tomorrow as we profile the man who had the impossible task of following him, John Adams. Please note, AI assists in the creation of this podcast from pointedwords.com, and remember, better pointed words than pointed swords.